Guys, welcome to our first full-out interview with my dear friend, Joey Bragg. He's the best. You're going to love him. I talked to him about his life as a child stand-up. And guess what? He's still a stand-up today. So if you want to keep up with him after this episode, you can follow him at Joey Bragg or go see one of his hilarious stand-up shows all around the country. Okay, get ready. Let's go full out.
Now, introducing Full Out with Brittany Ross.
Welcome to our podcast.
Yay.
Your first guest.
I should know, but what's it called?
It's called Full Out.
Oh, hell yeah. Oh, I didn't know that.
Okay, so.
First of all, you sent me this in a voice memo.
Yeah, I know.
And then the voice memo disappeared, and I was on my way here today, and I was like, what if she told me stuff that I'm not going to remember?
Yeah, I did. I said a lot of stuff in the voice note that we need you to repeat right now.
Yeah.
No, it's called Full Out, and it's basically, I was a three-time national championship college cheerleader.
Of course.
Like, I was talking to Keita, and he was like, yeah, once you hear that, you're like, of course you were.
Yeah, exactly.
I look obviously like one. I know it's a big shocker.
You look like if ChatGPT was making a three times.
Exactly. They're like, what would it be?
And what does her house look like? And it's like, palatial estate. Builds this place.
No, but I feel like it dominated my childhood.
Yeah.
Well, into early adulthood. So this is a podcast about something that dominated your, I like threw myself, my whole self into it. I changed all my pillowcases in my room from ones that said, like, I had pillowcases that said, eat, sleep, cheer, repeat. Because now I look back and I'm like, because without cheer, like, why breathe? You know, I was obsessed.
It's so, I mean, I feel like there are so many things when you're a little kid that you get obsessed with and you do it because you love it. And then as you get older, it becomes like a job or it becomes something else and you lose it. I love that. I wish I could harness that again.
Yes.
That feeling of like, I just want to do this because I love it so much and I'm obsessed with it and I don't feel embarrassed by it. I just want to do it and I love it. And
I know. Like Penelope wants to do all these, my daughter Penelope, she wants to do all, I'm not, maybe I shouldn't say her name, but I feel like everyone knows.
Bleep it out. My daughter?
Bleep out her name. she's like wants to make all these like craft projects and I find myself in this headspace. I'm like, but what is the purpose of this craft project?
How do we monetize this, Penelope?
Yeah, I'm like, what are we doing this for? Just to like sit around the house and look like a piece of trash castle?
Yeah. But like that's the, like adults start crocheting and their first thought is like, I should make a Etsy page.
Yeah.
I start selling this.
Do something
just
with
do it.
Just
do it for fun.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, just make
garbage.
Except
like, just like, you know, I spent my whole day yesterday making a paper castle.
How long do you think that's going to stick around in your house? Are you one of those moms that's going to like keep it forever? Or is this like as soon as she turns around?
I have like a staging area for how things go. Because I do throw things away. Because, you know, they do like recycling week at school where they make a bunch of things
garbage
out of trash.
Yeah,
and then you bring it home and she's like, put my trash in on the mantle in the living room. And I'm like, that's
your
not
trash is going to go where trash belongs in the garbage.
I'm like, why don't we teach them how to like recycle by like taking them to like a recycling place?
Well, that's just as fun. Why make a picture frame out of bottle caps when you can just watch us crush cans for a living?
They did a whole recycled fashion show at her school. And I made sure we used stuff that already been used and made this like cool outfit. And I walked in and kids were wearing brand new trash bags. And I was like, this is not what? This is not the point of this. So it'll like stay out. Then it goes into the closet. If she asks about it, I'm like, oh, it's in the closet right next to the trash can in the closet.
I just give her about
3 weeks to ask about it.
Yeah, good. And then it's gone.
And then it's gone. And then I'm like, I don't know.
There is so many. My parents weren't really sentimental at all. And there's like a chest at the base of my parents' bed that hasn't been, I haven't opened it in like, they probably haven't opened it in like 8 years. And I opened it, it just been cleaned out. And a lot of the stuff, the only stuff they kept were like some of our baby teeth and like an old hat I used to wear.
And you're like, the tooth fairy's not real.
No way.
How do you have these?
I don't know. There's a part of me that is like so actively trying to connect with the part of me that was like a little kid doing it because I liked to do it.
I know. It is fun to get in that flow of just doing something because it's fun, you know?
Right? I know.
Yeah. Like sitting in your room and listening to music.
Never.
Yeah.
I should. The intent of like putting a record on is it like forces you to sit there and listen. But then the whole time I'm like, I should be doing XYZ.
I know. I can't relax at all neither. To save my life. I know. It gives me anxiety.
Yeah. Well, this is relaxing.
Yeah, but we're actually like doing something.
Monetizing our relaxation.
I'm like, I can talk to my friend as long as there's a camera on.
Yeah, exactly. We haven't spoken in months. And all of a sudden it's like, let's catch up. But we need to make something out of this.
Yeah, exactly. Wait, okay. So I wanted to talk to you about being a child stand-up. Mm-hmm. But I feel like, okay, I feel like we should talk about how we know each other and then go into that, right?
Yeah. You want to start?
Yeah. Joey doesn't remember how he knows me.
You tell the story of how we met and I'll relive it.
Joey and I have worked on multiple shows together, but one of his shows that was his show, Call Your Mother, I was on it and we never actually met but on we were the show.
Filming during a pandemic, so you're wearing a mask and a shield.
Scenes together.
Yeah.
And then we met on a different show and he felt bad because he didn't remember meeting me on the other show. Because I was like, oh, yeah, I did your show. And then I found out, like, recently that you were like, oh, my God, we didn't meet. Thank God. I've been pretending like I remember you from that show.
It's hard because there's also a lot of times you meet somebody and they're like, oh, we've actually met before. And then you just like lie and be like, oh, of course I remember, blah, blah, blah. And then I'm like, I never expect to see you again.
Yeah, exactly.
At that point in our lives, not that I didn't think we hit it off, but I was like, I might never see Brittany Ross ever again. So whatever floats her boat. Little did I know, we're such good friends.
Yeah, I know. We've driven from like a small town in Illinois to Chicago for 5 hours in a snowstorm together in the middle of the night.
So. Well, Ray Lau slept in the back.
Yeah.
Didn't contribute to the conversation at all.
Yeah, that was okay. So anyways, you started doing stand-up when you were 12?
13. I like just turned 13. So it was like it's like a year anniversary today because I turned 29 yesterday.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Okay, so this is your what year anniversary of that?
I guess it's like 16th year, but I took a lot of time off. I did a lot of like, that's what I mean about the being a little kid and doing it for the love. Because when I started doing stand-up, I just loved watching stand-up. And I loved, it was like my hobby in that I loved watching it. And then I realized that it was doable. And because I watched the movie Funny People.
Okay. Yeah.
That depressed a lot of people, and I realized like,
I can't believe you were 13 when you watched that because I feel like that came out when I was like
too.
So much older.
Oh, I thought you were saying like because it's dirty and gross.
Yeah,
which is also true.
Wait, so you saw that?
I saw that, and it was kind of like a blew the lid off of how it's done.
Mm-hmm.
Like before that, I was just not that I was under the impression that they were all just talking up there, but like I get that it's like, oh, you write jokes, you go to an open mic, and then you work the system. And I didn't know necessarily if there were open mics around me, but I spent like 2 months writing and finding all of my favorite stand-up comics on Facebook.
Oh my gosh.
So like Nick Kroll and TJ Miller and Kumail Nanjiani and Pete Holmes. And I sent them all this message like, I'm 13. I want to do stand-up. I think before I had started doing stand-up, I sent them a message. I got a message back from Pete Holmes that was like really long and really like, here's what you need to do. And if you can't find stage time, make stage time. And you're young, so it's going to be hard. Like very...
That's so sweet.
So sweet. Yeah. Something I would never do if somebody asked me. I get 1,000 messages that are like, how do I start acting? I'm like, I don't know. Ignore. Yeah. Block.
Block.
It's funny because I think about that all the time. That like my life was changed by somebody being so patient with a fan. And I... Not that I'm not patient with fans,
like
but like pay me on Cameo.
Pete Holmes probably didn't get a lot of 13-year-olds messaging him about stand-up, whereas I feel like you get a lot of like kids messaging you about acting because you've been on kid shows.
Yeah, that's
so you're in their world.
Most of my advice is run.
Yeah.
Don't find happiness elsewhere.
Wait, so but why did you even start watching stand-up? How did you even know about stand-up before you got obsessed with them?
I think it was just like Comedy Central. Me and my family were watching stand-up. They used to do like Comedy Central Presents every night, every Friday night. And they would just be, Comedy Central was mostly stand-up. And we just kind of had it on the house a lot.
Cool.
Now my parents have MSNBC on, like they used to have Comedy Central on. But we were just a big comedy family and we did it a lot.
Were your parents funny?
Yeah. Yeah, cool. They're still funny.
They're still funny.
Kind of.
They used to be.
I worry about my dad not using, I'm not, like, they're getting old now. And I'm worried about my dad having dementia. not like, I mean, in like a real way, but also it's like early, he's only like late, he's like 56 or 57. Mm-hmm. But the other day I was talking to him and I was like, are you picturing what I'm telling you? When I'm telling you this story, are you putting images to the words that I'm saying?
Because that helps.
I think so. Or just I'm worried that he's just like in one ear,
zoning out,
the other zoning out. Yeah. But regardless.
That's how I feel about my husband.
Yeah. I think it's just a men thing.
Are you hearing this? Are you putting pictures? I'm going to start saying that. Are you putting pictures in your mind what I'm saying?
It's such a condescending thing, but like I'm not going to wipe my dad's ass when he's 62. At least until he's 80 something. Yeah.
Wait, so you guys were all watching it, then you became obsessed, and then...
I became obsessed. I wanted to do it. I wrote Pete Holmes. He, like, gave me, like a step-by-step process how to start, and the big first step is, like, go to an open mic and try it out, and I didn't want to do that. I was really nervous, so I had this notebook that, like, still to this day I look for and I can't find, and I don't know where it is, but I was writing jokes in it.
It was probably in that chest that your parents cleaned out.
Honestly, though, it might be. But my brother, like, he's 2 years older than me, went into my room, found the notebook, and then, like, just because, you know, there's, like, no privacy, and started reading it and came downstairs and was like, did you write this? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, this is really funny.
Oh.
It was, like, the only compliment he ever gave me my whole life. And,
That's awesome.
Yeah, and, I went up on stage. I went to an open mic.
How did you even find it?
The internet. I just Googled like comedy open mic. I found right next to the San Jose Improv, there was, there's Phil's Coffee is a chain. I think it was called Pete's Coffee.
Okay.
And they did like a smorgasbord open mic. I went twice. I was too nervous to put my name down.
No.
The third time I went and my dad took me. My dad was like the most supportive of everything. I had so many of those interests when I was a kid. Like I was like into parkour at one point and I was like,
oh, cool.
I'm gonna learn a Rubik's cube and I'm gonna like cut stuff. I had like a bunch of different like where do I belong things. And I went up after this reggae band that ran the light and then this guy that read like a slam poem about his dog. And then I went up and was like, one of my first jokes was, I still think it's funny. Like, is it pathetic if I rework a joke I wrote when I was 12 years old?
No, I think it's perfect.
But, like, I really want to live in New York, but I just can't imagine how scary it is every time you hear the dun-dun. Because, you know, something horrible happened somewhere in the city. Is this a Law and Order joke?
Come on.
It was really good.
Yeah, that's really good.
My brother thought so. So
I can't watch Law and Order because it scares me too much. So,
see,
but
that's the point.
Okay, dun dun. That's what they do.
Yeah, they go like dun dun. Like something terrible happens and it goes dun dun.
Oh, okay.
And then it's like Law and Order.
Okay.
The joke is,
oh, I love it.
You're chilling in New York. You hear dun dun. You're like, somebody was murdered somewhere.
I love it. I was thinking of the Netflix sound.
Oh,
it sounds very similar.
Yeah,
it does. So it's like.
There's Squid Gaming.
Yeah.
But I was just obsessed with it. And then I got...
So it went well the first time you went up.
Yeah.
You felt like good about it.
It was a very like out-of-body experience. I don't know if you had that the first time you went up, but I like feel like I was watching myself do it. And I did that open mic a few times. Then I found this open mic at this comedy club. And then I started to do it. And
they let you in?
Yeah. There's a performer's law where if they're serving food... You can go in as long as you're performing. Yeah. So there were some clubs, like when I started coming down here, the Comedy Store, I would have to wait outside. But most clubs serve food. I was able to go in.
So how often did you start going up?
Like, you know, it ramped up. But there was a couple years when I was like 15 or 16 where I was going out every night and doing
it. No way.
And like my dad, and I can't like, he was the most supportive person ever.
And he would take you?
Every night. Yeah. And he loved it. Like, he does still
That's
love
cool.
it.
Like, he, like, got, like, a... It's cool. He got, like, a way to go out as well every night.
I think about it now. Like, if one of my cats asked me to go out every night to do something, I'd be like, fuck no, I'm exhausted.
One of your cats.
But, like, he did it.
It sounds like you're saying, like, one of my cool cats. Like, one of my kids.
No, I mean, like
your
a
actual
cat.
Cats.
Feline.
Yeah, I feel like that's different than your kid being like, I wrote all this material.
Yeah, I guess.
I think it's cool to see. Yeah.
It is... He was raised Jehovah's Witness.
Oh,
and
whoa.
So there was like a really lack of support in everything he wanted to do. And so I think he's just kind of overcompensating from the childhood he had.
Mm-hmm.
But like, then it was pretty fast. I did comedy for like 3 or 4 years. And then they started bringing me down
like
to LA.
Bay Area?
Mm-hmm. I was doing like the improv and I did some shows at the Punchline. I did like the Sunday showcase, but I was never like passed at the Punchline. I was like opening for people at the Improv, and I did a lot at Tommy T's in Pleasanton, which is like this club that I kind of started at.
Cool.
Yeah.
And how was it? Because I feel like for me, when I was like so into cheerleading, I didn't like, I missed a lot of school social things because I was obsessed with this one thing, and like that stuff didn't matter as much to me. But did you like stand up is so, you had to have been the only person you knew doing stand up.
Oh yeah. And I was missing a lot. Like,
and were you cool to like, how was that?
At the time I was playing hockey, ice hockey. And so those started to kind of interfere with each other. And so I picked stand up when I was like 15 or 16. And yeah, I was like, I would miss, I remember I went to the winter formal with my eighth grade girlfriend. Can I say her? Yeah, I can say her name.
Yeah.
She doesn't exist on social media, but her name is Ilya. Ileana Garcia. She's like,
so she doesn't exist anywhere.
Anywhere
like
at all.
She's not on social media.
She's one of those people that, do you have those people where you're like, I want to know what they're doing so bad, but I just will never know.
Because they don't, yeah, I know.
It's like we're in the 50s again. I remember I left that winter formal like an hour in because I was like, sorry, babe. Dimitri Martin's in town shooting his show, and Pete Holmes invited me as a special guest, so I got to go do that. So
that is so cool.
I know.
I feel like to be like, I'm leaving winter formal. So you just left your eighth grade date there?
Yeah, I left her there.
Like, because she's not allowed to come because she's not performing.
Of course not.
So she's not allowed in, right?
Yeah, and I like live a whole life.
Is crazy.
I know. I think about it all the time, and like, I didn't play any like high school sports. I didn't really do any extracurriculars or anything, but it was, you know, I
picked stand-up. Were you writing jokes about like your eighth grade girlfriend?
Yeah. I was writing jokes about like, I got my phone taken away by my English teacher. My English teacher in high school said, with great power comes great responsibility, Nelson Mandela. And then I was like, that was Spider-Man's uncle. And I like wrote, like I had a lot of jokes like that.
Okay.
Like, they were, honestly, I look back on it now, I watch those videos and I'm like, I was so good.
That's amazing. Will you send me like a clip of something from when you were a kid?
They still exist. I wanted to so bad to get back onto the YouTube channel you're supposed to, but I can't because it's like an ancient YouTube account. There's a lot out there. Like if you Google Joey Bragg stand up, you have to peruse for one where I'm not like 15.
No way.
Yeah.
How does that feel?
Again, I feel like now hard-hitting questions. It feels good.
Does it feel to have your 15-year-old stand-up pop up first?
I'm proud of it.
Yeah,
like I do
cool.
watch it, and I'm like, yeah, that was funny. Like I liked it. I like it. I don't feel much shame. I feel a lot of shame about my Joey Bragg parkour videos. Those are
now we're all gonna look for those too.
Yeah,
because you just put it up there.
I know. It's like, please don't Google Joey Bragg parkour. We really want them to. Please, guys. I was so cool and young. But it is, it was like that thing that I'm trying to get back to, like what we were saying, where like, I did it because I loved it. Like, I just loved it. Mm-hmm. And not that I don't anymore. It's just there's like, I have to pay rent. And stand-up is my only gig right now. So like, there's a lot of pressure on like making it work. And that love for it takes a back seat when like, I need to figure out how to pay rent this month.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I feel like that when I was on a scholarship for cheerleading because it became a job because it was like, I have to be at this thing because it's paying for my school. And if I don't, I'm like, and then I didn't like it as much.
Yeah.
I was like, I got to get out of here.
I know. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's a lot of pressure.
A lot of pressure. Yeah. And like, that's what they don't understand about kids in that place in anything like that is that you get that pressure put on you at that young age. And then that like sets up what you think adulthood is.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, I don't know about you, but I, for the longest time still, my self-worth is so intrinsically tied with like how well I'm doing in my career in stand-up because like, that's what I was known for my whole life. I made a choice when I was 13. Then all of a sudden, like I'm still doing that thing.
Yeah.
And I don't really know myself outside of that thing.
Yeah, totally. I think mine is all like, I have a lot of things about like winning.
Yeah.
It's like if I feel like I like nothing else matters except like the like shiny thing at the top.
Yeah.
That's like never the fun thing anyways, you know?
Yeah. So the shiny thing on the top of the person pyramid.
Yeah. The spray glitter that I put all over my body.
That's all that matters. Your sister competes too, right?
She did, yeah. And she can still do everything. She was on my team with me all the time. Yeah.
That's so fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. It is. It does change. It makes you like see your career and what you're doing differently. I feel like when you're so obsessed when you're younger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I don't know if it's good. It's good and bad, I think.
I don't know if it's good at all. Like, I do think it's good. I do think it's good that I am here. Like, I love where my life is. But I definitely feel... Like, I did stand up until I was, like, 17. I mean, I did stand up through this. But when I was 17, I was put on a Disney Channel show. Mm-hmm. And so, like, it went from there's this hobby that I love and this thing that I'm obsessed with to I'm doing this different, like, adjacent thing mm-hmm. that's not stand up. But it's, like, paying me more than my parents are making as public school yeah. teachers. And also, I live in L.A. They can't afford it. Like,
did they move to L.A. with you?
No, my parents. I lived in L.A. I moved to L.A. by myself when I was, like, 17.
Whoa.
And so there was that added pressure, too, that
and
it was,
you weren't
like...
And you weren't going out and doing stand-up by yourself at night, or were
I
you?
I was.
You were?
I was, yeah. But it started to slow down around the time I had, like, a real job.
Yeah, because you're so busy.
Yeah, and also, like, you're young, and I'm getting to that point where, like, oh, I have a job, and I have a girlfriend, and I have an apartment by myself, yeah. and, like, it's blinding yeah. at yeah. that time.
That's crazy to move here by yourself at 17 for the show.
Yeah.
So did you stop school?
I did studio school.
Oh, you did the studio school.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so funny because, okay, so I think you know this, but I auditioned for that show that you were on
yeah.
like a bunch of times. Yeah. And we have like a mutual friend who wrote that show. And I really thought I was getting that show.
Really?
Like 100. Well, because I was on another show before that they were writers on, and all the writers on that show would always be like, we're all creating shows for you, Brett. We're all yeah. writing shows for you. And then they brought Hollywood. Me in to read this character so many times. And I feel like they'd write new scenes and then they'd be like, let's have Brittany come in and read the scenes and stuff. But I am so much older than you.
Yeah. No.
Like, yeah. I think I was like 26 or 27 when this happened.
Wow.
To play like a teenager. And then finally Disney was like, I found this out years later. I like went in for like one of the like with everybody there. And they, I guess, told our friend Ron, why are you bringing in this old lady?
Hey, it's not going to happen for her.
She's not getting this old lady.
What is this charity audition you keep yeah. doing for this lady?
And Ron told me this is like 10 years or way later after this all happened. He's like, but Brittany, you came in to like the auditions with like X's on your hands from being at a club the night before. And I was like, I did not. And he's like, you did. You had like stamps on your hand. You're like smoking a cigarette. And I was like, no, I wasn't.
So funny. Yeah. It's funny to me when you get so close to something like that, that you didn't get put in the show.
Yeah.
In another way.
I mean, I feel like Ron puts me in his other shows and stuff. Yeah. But yeah, I know. It was like kind of heartbreaking for me because I think it made me be like, I'm not 16 anymore. Yeah. And I was like, I'm actually 28.
And you got called a lady.
But I was used to being like the 16-year-old, you know, I was yeah. like, I have to be the 16-year-old, like whatever. But yeah. then we met on like a different show later. But I always feel like that show was like this show that ended my child acting career. Made me realize I can no longer yeah. play a child when I'm 28 years
old. It's not like you like it call you a lady and you look in the mirror and you're like, oh my God.
Yeah, it was like my come to Jesus moment. Yeah. Where I was like, I guess the gig is up. I was like.
Oh, that's so, yeah. All right, what a stupid industry this is.
I know, which is so funny to me that like now we're friends because I feel like I had, you know, that was like one of the show, that was like one moment in my life where I really remember, you know, you have like so many things that you're told you're getting or disappointments yeah. or something. But I think that was the first one where I had to like realize, like I had just get a tougher stomach about things or yeah. something and be like, nothing means anything. Nothing is true. Like, it made me a little bitter.
That's what, when they told you originally that you didn't get it, did they say it was because they think you're a lady?
No, they were like, they think you're too old. Like my managers told me that. And then I became friends with Ron, who created the show with his friend John. And maybe like 10 or 12 years later, he told me that Disney said, why do you keep bringing in this old lady? So I found out in retrospect. I was like, okay, that's nightmare. Fair.
That is a nightmare. Yeah.
Yeah. I know, because I was playing like children with like people who were children.
Yeah, to be fair, I still think you could play a child.
Well, now I take that as a diss.
That's not how you look. It's how you act and are.
That's even worse. That's
See you holding
like
your,
a child.
I see you holding your child, your real life child, and I'm like, get that child out of that other child's life.
I feel like I do go out with my kids, and there's been multiple times where people have felt like my friend is their mom. And I'll be with my friend who's like half Cuban, and they're like, multiple times they think that she's Penelope's mom or something. I'm like, what about me does not read mom in this situation?
Maybe it's because you're 4'3". How tall are you?
I'm 5'1" on this side and 5' on this side, according to a dermatologist who told me that this side of my face is longer and leaner. So.
Really? That's crazy.
I don't know.
Wait, does that
I wasn't
a Hollywood
asking
thing?
For that.
That's what you went to after Liv and Maddie turned you down? You're like, yeah, how do I do it? This side of your face is taller than this side. Can't help you, though.
Yeah, I was like, I'm trying to look 16 forever. Because, but wait, so then you were on that show. But did you play a stand-up on that show?
Yeah, I was playing Joey. At that time, when I got that show, I was like, I did something else for Disney. I did this like Disney XD pilot with John Heder, who played Napoleon Dynamite.
Oh, yeah.
That didn't end up going. They tried to like put me in a few other things, but I was also like doing stand up. Now I was like in LA doing stand up, where so like the people I was doing stand up with were the people I admired, and the shows were cool, and I was at the Comedy Store. And I was just really hell bent on that being my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so they offered me. It was Bits and Pieces, the original Liv and Maddie thing.
I remember.
If you recall.
Because, it's like a scar on my heart.
Yeah. they offered it to me a few times, and I was like, you know, I'm a stand-up. I'm not an actor. I'm just going to do stand-up. And so I turned it down a few times, and then they offered me a bunch of millions of dollars, and I did it. And
Disney offered you a bunch of millions of dollars. Interesting.
But I got to like carve out my stand up for the show, like, because they were worried about there being a morality clause.
Okay.
Where like I go up on stage, I say something they as a business are morally against.
Yeah.
They don't want somebody representing their channel doing that.
Yeah.
I got that like carved out of my contract, which was kind of like a nobody had ever done that before.
No, because I was on a show where a kid got fired for getting like a DUI, and they had to change the whole show, the whole entire show.
Which one was that? Pair of Kings?
Yeah.
Yeah. That guy is like a pimp, like a real life pimp. But
maybe I should have him on.
So when did you start pimping? All those people's lives are so much cooler than me. All the post-Disney Channel actors' lives are like, they all went to jail and almost OD'd, and I'm like, I'm doing Brittany Ross's podcast today.
But you got a fancy coffee mug that you're
I know, very into.
Okay.
But yeah, I did the show, and then
they let you carve that out of your contract. Cool.
So I was like still doing comedy at the time, and I Ron and John, who created the show, we hit it off. We're all very close, like still very close. And the character's name was Joey but when the show got picked up, and it's just like Joey wore cat shirts and loved cats and loved superheroes, and it was all very much me. And so by the fourth season, I was like, I want this. The producer was like, I want you to do stand up. I got to write the stand up. It was
cool. Yeah. That's awesome.
I also thought that it was going to kind of bridge the gap between the people that knew me from the show to the people that know me as I do stand up, but that did not work. I still have people all the time that
I feel like the Disney audience is not the audience that's going to watch stand up as much.
Yeah, that's true. But it was fucking.
At least then, maybe now.
I don't know. I feel like now there's like a weird. Kids are watching like Kill Tony on TikTok and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's like kind of bad.
Yeah.
I've been doing these. This is non sequitur, but I've been doing these teen tours at the Improv this year. And those kids are like bad.
Yeah, they know everything.
They know. Yeah. But like, they're also the whole like, oh, the newer generation is woke and progressive.
Oh, no, they went the total other way. I feel like the Gen Z is like very woke and progressive. And then the younger kids are like, we're not doing that.
Yeah.
And they're like worse.
To spite them. Yeah, it's gross.
Yeah.
Yeah. I felt like I was at like my uncle's house with how many slurs were flying around.
Yeah, I know. I feel like Penelope's going to be like a terror.
I'd say Penelope drops a hard R before she's 10.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, she's been doing.
I'm sure.
She's been doing. We just got back from London, and she has like a full British accent now, which is, she's like, Mummy, I need to wee and stuff, which is like better than what she was doing before.
Mom, I need to piss.
Because she also has a girl in her class who's Persian, and she was doing a Persian accent everywhere we went. And I was like, I'm like, are they going to think this is funny and acceptable again? And yeah. She's like, I don't know.
That's funny.
Or we walked into a hotel in Geneva, and they had like a bidet and a shower in one bathroom, and then on the other side there was a toilet in the other bathroom. They were separated, and she saw the bidet and she goes, what kind of fucking toilet is this? I was like, yeah, what kind of fucking toilet is that?
So, classic American traveler.
Just gonna
Penelope.
Like let her run with it.
Yeah, dude, that's so funny. Yeah. Do you let her curse, or is it just
at
it's
home,
really funny.
Sometimes it's so funny because she uses it really well.
She's
and
too
all she
cute.
Says is fuck. And she'll go, she'll be walking up the stairs and she's like, what the fuck is that? And I'm like, it's coming out so naturally and
yeah.
so well. It's not like she's doing it to be like, what the fuck? You know,
yeah,
she had,
exactly.
So we told her she can only do it at home, and she's not allowed to do it when she goes to Arkansas and sees my cousins in Arkansas. I'm not allowed to do it either. But yeah.
Speaking of wild teen stand-ups, do we want to talk about the jersey?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. So we asked you to bring like a nostalgia, something from your time as a your youth.
I tried, yeah.
I want to know what this is.
I tried to bring, I have my dad send me a picture, so we can put that on the Patreon. I don't know how this works. Put it on the,
we don't either.
Put it right here. Right
great.
Here. I made business cards when I was like first starting stand up for real.
And you made them yourself?
I made them myself on, it's not GoDaddy, Vistaprint.
It's so Vistaprint. Funny because your life as a teen is so different than mine. And I'm like, I think I'm 10 years older than you.
Yeah.
And even when you're like, I just searched for it online. I'm like, we would have had to go in the yellow pages and like find
crazy.
The stand-up
yeah.
clubs.
It's
so I'm like,
Terminator.
Well, how did you find a open mic? And you're like, just online.
Yeah. I know. Isn't that wild?
Yeah. It's so
I think
funny.
About like how lucky I am that I was born at that time too, when like the internet was such a fledgling thing, or like mm-hmm. social media, I guess, was such a fledgling thing that like that was before. You know, Pete Holmes was just an open personal Facebook account that he used.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Like, that doesn't happen anymore. Like, you can't, like, find somebody like that.
Yeah.
They put stuff in place so that you don't,
yeah.
you only are the people you know.
They have, like, a secret DM section in the back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now I get my followers go to a request. Like, I get, like, real hidden ones and then requests.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, so
when
nice.
You open up the requests, sometimes it's like, oh my God, what is going on?
I just saw this yesterday. I think I took a screenshot. This might not play on this, but I got this woman that has sent me a happy birthday message every day. Oh, maybe I did not take a screenshot. Gosh, dang it. She sent me a happy birthday message every day of my birthday since like 2015, but she is always wrong. It's either July 19th, the 21st,
day.
Or the 22nd.
Oh,
and this is the first year she got it right. And I've never responded, but she sends the exact same message every time. Part of me wanted to be like, you nailed it this time, Gretchen, or whatever her name is.
Then you would not stop getting.
Yeah, exactly. That's also the problem.
Yeah.
Sometimes like this person sent me this mean video that was like someone that they said looked like me. And I just said like, boom, roasted. And this person is like, you left me on red. Will you send me $500 on Venmo? And it's like,
yeah,
all right, now I got to block somebody that was just a fan
that I when I like opened my requests and I saw some like insane stuff that these like you know like political like but so mean like hateful things people were saying about just like one post I did about the ICE raids and I like about lost my mind. I was like trying to type out all these messages and I wanted it to like look really good and I wanted to like really hit them with the facts. So I asked ChatGPT what I should say.
Oh no.
And ChatGPT gave me like four really good answers. And then the fifth one, it was like, or just don't engage. I was like, okay,
wow.
I'm not going to engage. Yeah. I guess I'll take ChatGPT's advice.
Thanks, ChatGPT.
And leave this one alone.
Oh my gosh.
Because I feel like it never would have stopped.
Good for ChatGPT.
Yeah.
It learned from all of our families alienating each other in Facebook arguments.
Yeah, just don't engage. Do you want me to hold that mic for you?
I think I can. This is perfect. I have to tell the story first. I was doing comedy In the Bay for like a couple of years.
Okay.
San Jose Improv was, have you performed at San Jose Improv? No. It's humongous. It's like it's an old theater. It's the only comedy club in San Jose. I mean, there's like Rooster Teeth Feathers in Sunnyvale, mm-hmm. but it's huge. I did my first ever open mic like right next door. Mm-hmm. I wanted so bad to like perform there and have my name on the marquee. And I did a few like open mics there, a comedy competition. I got kind of in the cycle. Mm-hmm. I got hired to host. Oh, I think I was hosting. It was either I was hired to host. I don't think I was featuring, but it might have been a guest set. But I'm pretty sure I was hosting. And the first night on Friday was Doug Stanhope. Okay. And then on Saturday was Bobcat Goldthwait. Mm-hmm. And I was maybe comfortable. I was like friends with the wait. This is still one of those traumatic events that I like replay in my head.
Yeah.
And sometimes when I feel like you think about something over and over again, you like add.
Make it worse.
Storylines and like things that like are blown up that weren't necessarily a big deal. But I.
How old were you when this happened?
Gotta be 15 maybe. Okay. But I also looked like up until I was like 17, I looked like I was 9 years old. So
yeah.
I was short and pudgy. Mm-hmm. I looked like a little tiny lesbian. And I went for the first night. I think it was Doug Stanhope first. And he's like a very mean-spirited, obviously, comic. Mm-hmm. But he was so nice to me behind like backstage. I was just on top of the world. It was the first time. I think it was the first time I was doing a weekend there.
Okay.
And so I was just like elated. This was the place I wanted to be.
Yeah.
And because also, there's so many of this is like I have to piece together. But Doug Stanhope was super nice, went up on stage and spent the whole time being like, what the fuck? I can't believe this fucking kid. This guy's doing my job. He's 15 years old. Like, it wasn't like, and I won't ever perform here again. It was very much like mean-spirited in a funny way. Like, he's just like, they just saw me do material about like my English teacher or whatever. And then he's got to talk about it. And he spent like the first 5 minutes of my set talking about me. And then the next day, Bobcat Goldthwait kind of did the same thing where he was like, I can't believe what a ridiculous thing. I'm coming here. I've been doing this forever. And, you know, they hire a child to open for me. Mm-hmm. Like, just silly stuff. And I don't think it was the same weekend, but there was another instance where I was at the San Jose Improv and this homeless guy or unhoused gentleman, crazy man, could have had a house.
You would probably call them homeless.
Yeah, so. Or crazy. He just walked in off the street and then took my glasses off my face. Like, I was like a little kid, like trying to sell merch or something. And he just took my glasses off my face. And then this old, his name was Jim. And he was
like, do you think he thought your glasses were for sale?
I don't know. Maybe. Okay. I think he was doing like a.
Yeah, he's trying to like.
My glasses are. Maybe I was like engaging too much. I have no idea. But this old manager, Jim, the like rumor was that he was like spec ops or like Jim killed a bunch of people for the FBI, and now he's like, his retirement is that he's the general manager of the Improv.
What?
Like, he was like one of those stories that when everyone's saying it as an adult.
Also, if you're 15, you're like, that's true.
Yeah, exactly. Like, now I'm like, of course not. It's just like this lore behind this old guy. Back then, I was like, he's spec ops, he's a Green Beret. And this guy took.
Now he runs the San Jose Improv.
Yeah, exactly. They were like, we gotta have someone we trust. And this guy took my glasses off my face, and old guy, manager of the Improv, uppercutted him, like without even like doing anything, just punched him in the face, uppercutted this guy. And then while he was like, it was like two swift movements. It was like, boom, boom, uppercutted him and then punched him in the face. And this guy went like flat out, laid down. They drug his body out. They were like, Joey, go upstairs. It's like a whole thing. And this was, I don't think it was the same weekend, but they happened pretty close to each other. And then after the weekend with Bobcat Goldthwait, because I think there were two shows with Bobcat and one show with Doug Stanhope, mm-hmm. I got a letter from like the manager of Improv Nationwide, the CEO of the Improvs.
Who do you think it was?
I don't know. In my head, it's Bud Friedman, like smoking a cigar and being like, you're done, kid. But I don't think that's what it was. But I got this letter and it was like, Joey was given the opportunity to perform at San Jose Improv. And then the manager, Jim, who punched that guy, was like, he walks around like he owns the place. He's getting in the way of wait staff. He's talking to hosts. He's like, you know, strutting throughout the club. Like, basically, like, I was just being a disrespectful kid. Mm-hmm. And both these comics said that they didn't want him opening for him. And since we got this note, Joey is now banned from all improv comedy clubs nationwide. And I was like 15, and that was my dream. And still, I mean, the Improvs are the biggest comedy club chain in the country. And you know, when things happen like that when you're an adult, they make you angry. But when things like that happen to you when you're a kid, they make you sad.
And it like crushes your spirit.
Crushed me. Yeah. And like broke my heart.
That's so sad. And wait, you got it in a letter?
Yeah, like an email. Like an email with like a letter PDF attached to the email.
And was it like sent to just you?
Put it on your wall? Yeah, yeah, right? Yeah, signed by Bud Freeman. I'm like, I'm going to take just that part.
Yeah. Wait, did you get your own emails at that point when you're 15?
Yeah. My own email, my personal email was on my business card too. My personal email and my cell phone number were on my business card that I was just handing to strangers. But I think I had a manager already at that time that was down in LA that, funnily enough, I was managed by Levity, which were the parent company owners of...
Yeah, that's who my reps are now.
Oh, really?
That's Matt, my manager from Levity.
Hey, man. Good. How's Judy?
She's great. Was Judy your manager?
Yeah, well, she was like... I was managed by somebody else there, but I know her. But she, Judy, and a bunch of my other managers, like, helped me compile a letter to write to the improv to be like, please no.
Yeah.
And I did, and it was lifted like 6 months. I think it was like a 6 month period where they were like, in this 6 months, you won't perform here, but then it'll be lifted at the end. And it was fine. And then now that I say that story, I'm pretty sure I was given this the weekend that my first weekend there, which was the weekend that I got then banned forever.
So you were given this?
I was given this by the improv. Because there was this picture of, I think it's not John Lennon. There's this famous picture of Jerry Seinfeld and somebody else wearing this for the improv softball team.
Okay.
It was so cool. And it was like upstairs at the Sanzi Improv. And I loved it. And then they started selling them and I loved it. And they were like, here you go. And they gave it to me. It's like a, you've made it, kid.
Oh my gosh.
And then like
gosh.
A week later, they then were like, and you'll never be back.
Oh my gosh. That's so sad.
And it like sat in my closet for so long where I wanted to wear it, but it like broke my heart to wear it. And then one time when I was older, I was already living in LA. This was like years in my past. I went home and I saw it in my closet. It had like coffee stains on it. I washed it. They all came out.
Why did it have coffee stains on it?
It had like some like big brown splotchy stains. And I washed it and I put it on and I was like, oh, fits weird. Fits real weird. Like doesn't buttons up weird. Like it's not a good, like well-made, doesn't feel good on my body.
Like, maybe it's that's actually them. It's not me.
And maybe that's like an allegory for the whole thing.
Yeah.
I do love the improv. I do love performing at the improvs. But maybe at that point, it just wasn't a good fit.
It wasn't right for you then.
Yeah.
Interesting. That's crazy.
Isn't that
and
crazy?
Then when did you go back there for the first time after that?
I don't even remember. There's so much of that part of my life that felt so like crazy and like things were happening and so many, like, I don't even really remember, like, so many things that would be significant to me now or that were significant to me then or like things I don't even remember. Like I did a lot of helping for Ralphie May a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so after I got banned from the improv and then let back the improv, I did Ralphie May at like San Jose, Oxnard and La Brea and like a few of those. And I can't remember who else, but I think then after that, there was some traumatic stuff that happened with stand up around that time. Like when I was doing Live and Maddie, I was doing this show at the improv a lot on Wednesdays called Comedy Juice. It was like 10 p.m. on Wednesdays. And we switched our live taping schedule to Wednesday. And I had to call this guy and tell him, like, hey, I can't make this show.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like 16, 17. And he on the, I remember like where I was standing outside the stage of Live and Maddie. And he on the phone was like, you can't fucking do this, man. Like, you need to pick it. It's either you're in one or you're in the other. You cannot half-ass both because you really fucked me over. And like just berated
me. And
you
like take it so personally at that age, as opposed to like later you'd be like, this is his shit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And also at that time I was like a little kid. All I wanted so bad was for the comedians that were adults to like treat me like an adult and to respect me like I thought that they were respecting each other. And obviously I was a little boy. And so that like wasn't ever going to happen.
Yeah.
So when things like that, it just scared me. And it just kind of freaked me out. So stand-up started to kind of drift out of my list of priorities, and I found it a few more times throughout my life. And
so once Liv and Maddie ended, did you go right back to it?
Pretty much. But you know, I was doing like some movies. I went back for like periods at a time.
Okay.
Only like a couple years pre-pandemic, I went back to it full time. And then the pandemic hit.
Okay.
I did like a bunch of Zoom shows. And then when the pandemic was over, I'm like, this is what I want to do. Because I do love it. Mm-hmm. And I think that if I kept doing it, that burnout that I felt would have just been like, I would never have gone back to it.
Yeah, totally.
So I'm glad it happened the way it did. But it was like hard. Like losing the love for something that was like the reason I was here was hard.
Yeah, and then to like be here. Yeah, but you also found something totally different.
Yeah. Yeah.
And,
that pays a lot better than stand up and it's a lot more job security.
Yeah, totally.
At least at the time.
Yeah. But but you have less control over when you're doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's something that I run into people like this guy came up to me and was like, dude, when we first met, you came up to me and you asked me if I wanted to do your show at Tommy T's. And I was like, sure. And then I asked him if he could bring 10 people.
Oh my
gosh. He's like, you run a fucking bringer show, dude. I was like, dude, I was 15 years old.
Yeah. People aren't giving you a break.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's the kind of nice thing about stand-up is people are just like, we're not giving you a break. Yeah. So I don't know. I find it like a little refreshing.
Yeah.
But
I find it hurtful.
It's hurtful, but also, I don't know. I guess I feel like
nice.
My cheerleading gymnastics background, I feel more comfortable when people are hurtful to me than when people are nice to me. Yeah. Yeah.
I struggle.
That's why
with
I feel
it.
Like I liked stand up when I first did it. I was like, oh, people are mean here.
Yeah.
This is good for me. I was like, this is what I like this.
Oh, it destroys me. I'm still that like little kid so much. Anytime I see somebody from like the San Francisco comedy scene, mm-hmm. my first instinct is still like, do you respect me? It's so weird.
Yeah.
It's
but like, I mean, it has to be weird to be still be doing the thing that you were doing when you were a kid.
Yeah. That
you
is
know,
weird.
To like go out and be like, because you're different. Like they see you as the kid stand up.
Also,
you know?
It's like if Mozart was Mozart at 13. And I'm comparing myself to Mozart. But
I mean, we know that dun-dun joke.
Yeah, exactly.
We heard it.
That was my concerto number 5 or whatever. Yeah. But like then I took a break and I had this whole big thing where I was like, oh, a lot of people expected so much from me and then I'm not delivering that. Like there's that aspect too. And there's also just like when you're, it's just.
But I feel like you have a bit of a, at least from stories I've heard, you have a bit of like a, I'm not going to be that. I'm going to be something different than you expect of me in you, which is like funny. Like your story that you told about that Netflix movie that I feel like as a young kid, you had a lot of
chutzpah.
Yeah,
yeah,
totally.
I did. So, I realized this the other day about that Netflix. I could tell that story.
Tell us the Netflix story. It's so funny to me. I'm like, to me, I feel like it sums up like who you are as a young person in this story too.
Like a social activist.
Yeah, because you'd been doing stand-up for so long. And how old were you when this?
I was, I'd have been like 20. I think I was like 19 or 20.
Okay.
Yeah. And there was this scene where this girl, it was like a skinny dipping Happy Madison scene.
Okay.
Girl was going to get naked and that was like folk gratuitous. So I was like, what if instead of the girl getting naked, I get naked? And so like that shot that was, I felt like obligatory in every comedy from that era where it's like, you know, then you see the girl and she's like, you know, water up to here. What if it's just like, instead of that, you just get my penis? And they did it. Honestly, my penis in the joke in the story, like you don't see my whole penis. You see like mostly pubes.
Yeah. you made like a PowerPoint, right?
Yeah.
To present to the people at Netflix and tell them why.
Pitching it to them. And I literally didn't even get to open the PowerPoint or anything. I just like told them I think this would be funny. And they were like, okay. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Hell yeah. Oh no. But then I think the thing that was funniest to me was that like I, the day before we shot this, got back to my hotel room and realized like I hadn't trimmed my pubes my whole life. Like I was 17 years old and they just started growing. Like I wasn't going to like, I wanted to see how far it would go.
Oh my gosh.
I didn't know if they like naturally stopped themselves or anything. And then I got to this point where I was like, oh no, I have Seth Rogen between my legs and I have to go shoot this movie. And it was like midnight in Massachusetts and I had fingernail clippers and that wasn't working. And so I called
because also didn't the like somebody from the movie see you at the bar as you were going in your hotel and was like, hey, we're shooting your penis tomorrow.
He just like tipped a beer to me. He was like, hey, we got your penis on the dock tomorrow. Oh, God. And I called downstairs. I called the front desk at the Marriott in Peabody, Massachusetts. And I was like, do you guys have any scissors? And they go, we're not supposed, what are the scissors for? And I was like, arts and crafts. And they're like, okay. And I was like, 1 a.m, arts and crafts. Like, if ever there was a time when a person was going to themselves, I feel like they would say arts and crafts at 1 a.m. and they kill themselves. But they gave them to me. I did it. And then I like trimmed my pews for the first time with like Office Max Marriott branded scissors. Dropped them off at the front desk that day. Dropped them off. Didn't want to hand them to anybody. Literally put them on my desk. Like, thank you. And ran away. I rinsed them off. They were rinsed with cold hotel water.
Somebody's using those scissors.
I know. Okay. Why is the hinge sticking? There's an old pube in there. Old baby pube.
First haircut pube in there.
And then honestly, like this part, it sounds like such a bit. Like the story sounds like a bit just because the way it unfolds. But I literally did bring my mom to the premiere of this movie at the Arclight. And it was so funny, so cool. And then two people from Netflix and the director of the movie pulled me aside at like the after party.
Because you also felt like I did like a good thing for women, right?
I thought that it was like, I literally did feel like it was like, it was like around the time of the Women's March. Like I was like, you know what? This is what I can do for them. How many penises have we seen in comparison to how many full frontal naked women have we seen? It pales in comparison. I'm going to tip the scales. And then they came up to me at the wrap party and the Netflix people go, and the director goes, this is there from Netflix. We just want to let you know, we added $60,000 to the CGI budget because Netflix said there was too many pubes in that scene to air. And they had to edit my pubes out for the movie and then extra edit out my pubes for the trailer.
Oh,
because like
gosh.
YouTube guidelines wouldn't let me have that many pubes.
Oh my gosh.
And it ended up not doing much for women. You guys are still
you should
shorter.
Have taken that 60 grand and just gave it to women.
I know. I should have had so much.
That is crazy.
I think about that too. And I'm like, I don't know if I would do that now.
Yeah, like, that's sad, right?
Like I would do the like, but like, I don't know if I'd stand up for
it's
that.
It's like the like, you know, youthful, like the naivete thing that like makes you do crazy things like that.
Yeah. Or that weird, like maybe it's just because we're so downtrodden now, but I was like such an activist. Like, where is my place? What can I do?
Yeah.
And now I'm just tired. Yeah, there's just so much going on.
I get it. I totally get it. Did you have like anybody who you felt was like a good coach or like person who helped you when you were a kid stand up other than Pete Holmes?
Pete Holmes moment was really nice. Honestly, the Bay Area comedy like
they like
community
embraced you.
Is great. Some of them did, some of them didn't. When I There was the Punch Sunday showcase at the Punchline was like you go every Sunday and Molly, who's the general manager of the Punchline, would go up behind you and go like, you have 5 minutes after Sean Keane or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I went every Sunday for a year. I was just talking to her recently and she swore it was like 8 months, but if it was definitely shorter than most. Like some people go there for like a year and a half before they're ever put up. And I got put up and it was like the greatest moment. Like so much time had culminated into this 7 minute set. Mm-hmm. I felt like I did well. I was on the Punchline stage, like the club I wanted so bad. And I walk out onto the steps after my set and there's like four groups of people talking and I overhear them all talking about how I just skipped the line because I'm a little kid and my dad writes my jokes and how it's so unfair. And it was like, so there's that aspect of it too. Like some totally embraced me and some of my friends I'll be friends with forever. And I like am indebted to because of the like support they gave me. But also some people I would still murder if I saw them on the street. Like they were so cruel because they were just like jealous, I guess, or just like resentful. And like it's stand-up comedy. So it's so chill. It's not that big of a deal.
Does your dad miss that part of, like, I feel like your dad had a real social life and then you must have left and he must have been like, what do I do now?
Go to the dog park. That's all he does.
I feel like after I had Benjamin, I was bringing him with me like quite a few places and there'd be people who would like if I went out of town, my mom would come watch him in a hotel or something. People would be, I'd go to do shows and people would be like, how's Benjamin?
That's,
I
was so like,
this
cute.
Is funny. He felt like kind of a part of it in like a small way too.
You're a little mascot.
It's funny to be like, to have somebody else with you.
Yeah.
It's something you do all the time. Yeah. So.
Right.
Did your mom ever go?
Sometimes. Yeah. My mom, when I told her I wanted to start doing comedy, my mom goes, oh, honey, stand-up comedians kill themselves. You'll kill yourself. Okay. She told me like, and then the first time.
And then your dad was like, I'll take you.
Yeah, but I was like, yeah, hell yeah. One less mouth to feed. Off we go. Tommy T's.
Oh, man.
My mom is very supportive too. But I just think, you know, I don't think I would have been out nearly as much if I didn't have my dad.
Yeah.
He was just like,
Let's go.
So supportive of anything I wanted to do.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And I'm like, I'm very, very lucky.
What did your brother think to have your dad out every night with you? Like, you guys were like, we're going out without your brother.
When we were doing travel hockey, my mom kind of took my brother to travel hockey. My dad took me.
Okay.
Just the way it worked out. And so I think, I don't know, you know, I've talked to him about it. My brother and I didn't have the best relationship at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily know. It was like, I think that he's probably resentful a little bit of it, but also like he just wanted to go upstairs and play World of Warcraft.
So yeah.
It's not like it's impeding.
To do what he wanted to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Didn't impede him at all.
Do you have anything upcoming that you want to promote?
I was racking my brain. Not necessarily.
Okay.
I have some shows I'm doing in LA. I couldn't tell you the dates of them.
Okay, perfect.
I have this show coming, this live show that I think I'm doing at the Elysian.
Okay.
Called Bragging Rights. It's going to be like a late nighty show.
Oh, is it your show?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yes, yeah, so I'm trying to put that together. I'm just trying to do TikTok, Instagram, stay sane.
Where and what are your socials?
I am at Joy Bragg on Instagram, and then I'm at Joy Bragg 7 on TikTok.
Why 7?
Because somebody took at Joy Bragg on TikTok. Bastard.
Yes.
And won't give it back. And I'm also not verified on TikTok.
Ugh.
I know. But I'm all over the place.
Okay, on TikTok feed. And socials, and your parkour video on YouTube.
Yeah, exactly. Enjoy Bragg Parkour on YouTube.
On YouTube. Okay,
yeah,
great.
Watch that.
Great. Well, thanks so much for doing this.
Yeah, dude, this is so fun. I can't wait to see this show.
I know. I'm excited. You're great.
You're great. Look at us go.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Yay.
Yay.